Are we the generation of burned out women? We as women have been trained to work like men. We've been trained to completely ignore that we are cyclical human beings. Being at full capacity doesn't mean I'm at full potential. And actually being at full potential is going to require me to be at a low capacity. If someone's not doing their job, there's four things that you want to look at. Welcome back to the Boss Babe podcast. Lindsay, welcome to Austin. I am so excited about the CEO Mama retreat this week. Oh my goodness.
I love it here. Sometimes I'm like, yeah, do I need like a partial year home here? Stephen would probably be less annoyed with me if I was like a neighbor and not like a house guest.
I'm not going to protest you moving to Austin.
I know. I don't think I can handle the summers, honestly.
I'm very good at enrolling my friends into this specific neighborhood. So
you are. You have quite the tribe around here. I love it.
I just got back from Newport Beach. It was absolutely incredible. We just did a full week there. It was absolutely amazing. It was a mix of work and play. Went with my grandparents who were in town for a month. It was so good. Like, weeks like that just remind me of the beauty of having freedom in your business. Like, to actually enjoy life and do life things. It was incredible.
I love that area. I feel like in California, that's one of the best parts of California to live. Like, you're close to amenities. The beach is right there. It's not quite as busy as LA.
I don't know that I could live in LA again, or at least not right now in this stage of life that I'm in. LA is so busy and there's so much going on all the time, especially like if I had a baby or a toddler in it, it must be chaos.
Yeah. We don't need any more of that.
Are you feeling chaos right now?
Well, I mean, just kids, like, you know.
Oh.
Your kid, your solo, individual, very cute little girl doesn't feel like chaos to me, but having two boys who are constantly loud and touching each other is chaotic to me. Yes.
Touching each other.
I've said this before. There's something about boy mom life that maybe girls do this too, but like they're constantly touching each other, constantly. And it causes noise because one or the other of them reacts. And then they fight. And I'm like, why are we touching? So this is my life.
No, just touches me 24/7.
That's cute though.
Like actually 24/7. Her latest is when I'm on the toilet, like actually crying if I'm not having her on my lap. I'm like, what is it about no personal space?
Yeah. I think that's a phase. I mean, that's an age that like, I don't know what brain development it is right around two, but it's like that they start to realize they're separate from you, right? And so they need like the reassurance of attachment to mom.
It's a thing.
Yeah.
It's a real thing. But Stephen doesn't deal with any of this. He always goes to the bathroom in peace. I literally have to announce my departure and then ask him to safeguard my bathroom time. And then I still get knock, 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 knock. Mama, I miss you. Mama, where are you? Mama, open the door. I'm like, oh my goodness. I got like, Stephen sometimes just takes his phone and I swear just sits in there for like half an hour just to escape.
No, this is real. No, okay. So I spoke at an event a couple weeks ago when we were sitting around the table and we were just chatting about like, I don't know how this came up, but we were all talking about men and pooping. And there were eight women at the table, every single woman's husband, it was like 20 to 30 minutes. And I was like, wait, why? Like, why? And the same in my life. And I'm like, what are they doing in there? And then they come out, and their legs are asleep and they're like limping around.
Like, I've tried it because it's so quiet in there. And I've taken my phone, sat in there and thought, you know what? I'm going to get 20 minutes of reading my Kindle. Like, I'm going to take a leaf out of his book. I never get left in peace. There's always something. Natalie, do you remember where this is? Natalie, what do we do with this? Mama, lift me up. Mama, can I see you? Mama, hi. Mama, let me get the tissue paper for you. I'm like, oh my goodness. Just give me 5 minutes.
You got to use the upstairs bathroom or something. You got to come up here where like you can, there's a baby gate. She can't get to you. And Steven has to watch her downstairs.
Oh, that is a good.
That's a good hack.
That's a good call. Mm-hmm. That's a really good call.
I mean, not right now because you have so many house guests.
True. But generally. That's a good call.
I lovingly refer to your house as Hotel Ellis, and it really is. It's very cozy.
It is.
I love
it. Thank God we've got a lot of space and separation.
Yeah. Lots of it for you.
I love it.
How does it make you feel like thinking of having a second kid when you think of how much Noemi needs you right now and how like you don't have personal space? Does that factor at all into how you're feeling about like, oh, the mental load of two kids?
Yeah, definitely does. Last night, me and Stephen were lying in bed And just knowing Noemi's going to be two in literally 1 to 2 weeks, we were scrolling through and we went all the way back to the day she was born and just scrolling through, and then that newborn bubble we were in. And having that conversation around that newborn bubble was so blissful and incredible that first 3 months before I went back to work. And definitely we were talking about, it's not going to be like this with the second baby, because it's not just like we were just, I was lying with her on my chest. We were just like watching TV and I was just resting and, you know, healing and all of that. It feels like it's going to be a completely different ball game with baby number two, because there's the toddler who also wants all of your attention. So it definitely, I mean, I'm not pregnant, but I'm definitely have some nerves thinking about baby number two and how it all is going to come. And also we were at a friend's birthday. He just turned two, and we bumped into some friends of ours who have 4 kids under 6. And he was like, oh, how are you guys doing? Are you back in Austin? I'm like, yeah, we're actually leaving in a few weeks to go back to the UK. We're going to do summer in Europe again and then summer in California. And just like get, and he was like, oh, so how's baby number two coming? Because I don't think that's happening when baby number two comes. And I was like, what do you mean? And he said, yeah, well, it's just a whole new level of chaos, and it'll be a while before you have that kind of travel again. I'm like, okay, yeah, definitely getting anxious about that.
I mean, it's hard not to, like, until you know, obviously. It's like all things in motherhood, it's like, well, there's always the opinions until you know, but right. I do think, like, it is true, the second one, the newborn bubble is so different, because you have your, I mean I wholeheartedly believe that, like, you just infinitely have capacity to love however many kids you have. So it's not like you don't have the capacity for it, but you definitely don't get the kind of rest that you did, I don't think, with the first one, because you do feel like you need to have some one-on-one time, and they don't necessarily understand that your mobility is limited and things like that, you know. But yeah, I don't know, thinking back to those days, I'm like, man, I like really pushed myself to like try to be fair to Sawyer with time. But I don't know that that's the right approach either. I think you can choose too to say, like, it's not going to traumatize Noemi to take a few weeks of really focusing on a new baby and healing, and, you know, she'll be resilient. I also love when people who, when you have a second kid, you don't really need like a baby shower or anything, you know, you don't need a lot of gifts for the second baby. But I always love, I learned this from my friend Jackie, but every time that anybody in her life has a second baby or a third baby, she gets gifts only for the older kids. So like when the new baby comes home, she buys presents for the older children to be like, you get something, you know, so here's a coloring book, here's new books to read, like stuff. So they feel like they're thought of in all of it too. And I was like, that's really interesting. So there's those kind of things you can do too, to be like, here's some stuff for older, for Noemi when the baby comes home, to make it a little bit like more interesting, more at her level.
Well,
we're getting way ahead of ourselves, though.
Yeah. Yeah. So can tell. We can think about that later.
She's one just thing on my mind, because she's so cute and she's running around.
She is so cute. Okay. One thing that I wanted to talk to you about. I was at an event a few weeks ago and this just kept coming up, and I just want to have a conversation about it. I'm just feeling like, are we the generation of burned out women? And why? And what do we do about it? I was speaking at an event, there was 100 women there, and one of the women on the panel said, put your hand up if you're currently burned out or you have been burned out recently. And I would say 97 of those 100 women put their hands up. And I just looked at that room and I thought, if this was a room of male entrepreneurs, I just don't think it would be the same statistic. And maybe I'm wrong, and I'm open to being totally wrong. I just don't feel like it would be the same statistic. I don't hear Stephen talk about being burned out. Like, I don't hear that being a topic of conversation with his friends. I know we're feeling stretched and having a lot on, but I don't see that as much. And I could go into so many reasons why I think it is. I think there are a lot of reasons and we can talk about them. But I feel like burnout is a real problem for women, especially in our generation of women.
For sure. I mean, same at the event I was at the same weekend you were speaking. It was a big source of conversation around like do less better, which I think is another way of saying like I've tried to do too many things and I'm doing them all with a mediocre level of excellence, and that doesn't feel good. And so even if I don't label it as burnout, I'm not doing the combination of things I'm trying to do isn't my best, right? And So that, yes, I think it is that we are that generation, and I have lots of thoughts on where that comes from. But what you said about men, it's interesting to me because I'm like, I wonder if they, is it that they don't feel it, or is it that like they don't have the vocabulary or like the emotional somatic attack, like connection to know that that's burnout that they're experiencing. Like, cause I swear I've seen men and talked to men who are having feelings about like doing too many things or not doing what they want to be doing or feeling all this pressure based on, you know, where they've gotten themselves in their lives. But then they like, they don't necessarily think that it's not normal, or they are afraid to admit it cause it's not masculine, you know, to feel like you can do it all. I don't know. So I'm just like, as an offshoot, I'm like, interesting. I wonder if burnout is something our whole entire generation experiences and women just feel it and are able to kind of identify it better because it tends to like manifest in our bodies. Whereas maybe men don't have the somatic connection, but not an expert on it. I just think it's fascinating.
Potentially. I also think about though, let's say the week you're ovulating, right? For me, I feel like I have boundless energy. I need less sleep. I'm just generally happier, more productive, you know, I wouldn't say I ever feel burned out when I'm ovulating, just really feel very differently to other phases in my cycle. And obviously men don't have cycles. So I just wonder, do they have a consistent level where their body maybe needs less rest? They feel more energized. Like what that, I just wonder is some of it to do with our cyclical nature too? And actually, I do think we as women have been trained to work like men. Trained to completely ignore that we are cyclical human beings. We have been trained to like hustle, have more like I also think men tolerate like tons of coffee and like things that might burn your adrenals a little bit more than women do, or maybe specific times in women's cycle. You know, men we know can fast more than women. So I feel like there's an element of men and women are built very, very differently. They go through different cycles, and we work like men a lot of times versus honoring that we are women. And I don't think needing more rest, or I don't think being cyclical or any of these things makes us weaker, or, you know, makes us not as good at business or anything. I actually think it could be our superpower when we're tapped into it and we're using it, because I think it allows us to have different lenses of looking at things, different ways of, I think it's a real superpower. But I do feel like when we work like men, we burn out.
Oh, 1,000%. And I agree with the cyclical nature. And I think there's lots of science that proves that, you know, from an energy standpoint. And obviously men have like pretty consistent hormones every day of the month. And I also, I mean, there's all the things too of our generation. And I do think that the millennial woman, you know, who's even some of the older Gen Z people that I speak with who are like mid 20s, like there's this major pressure to like be independent, you know? And I think women read that call differently than men do too. And I don't know all the nuances to it. I do want to like learn more about this from a psychology standpoint, but I remember feeling this really hard push through high school and out, like getting kicked out into the world, going to college, all these things of like, you have to be independent. Like you've got to make your own money. You have to be, and it wasn't even so much about achievement anymore. It was more about like I didn't necessarily have to be the best at everything, but it was like, I have to be able to survive. You know, I have to be able to be independent. And some of that I think came from my mom. You know, my mom and dad were divorced. And so there was this whole like money mindset around independence and not wanting to be reliant on a partner because you might get divorced, you know, that I think is baggage that I, you know, carry from my mom. And, but also I feel like our culture really pushes women to work like men. Yeah. And like have the same, like live up to the same financial earning capacity that men have. And then all we talk about, or a lot of what we talk about, is how like we're working just as hard as them, but we don't get paid as much, you know? And so it kind of reinforces this, like, well, I'm working so hard, but I'm not getting as much out of it. And I think that psychologically burns us out. Cause I'm like, damn, I feel like I'm doing everything I can and I still can't make ends meet, or I'm still not making as much money as I wish I were, or I want to be making. And so there's the true, like nervous system burnout we experience, like our body's truly getting past capacity physically. And then I think we have this like psychological burnout where like, I feel like I'm putting so much work into everything I do and it's not working. And then I ruminate and churn on that. And I think some of that rumination and churn might be more of a feminine thing than a masculine thing. So that's interesting to me as we talk here. I'm like, oh yeah, I do that for sure. Like I make things bigger. I burn myself out mentally, like by churning and ruminating, probably more than physically burning myself out.
That makes sense. For me, I feel like whenever I burn myself out, it's because I follow that excited energy. You know how I've seen a quote, I think it was Naval, talking about how so many of us work like cows, like very consistent, we're grazing day after day after day, when actually so many of us are lions. We sprint and feast and then we slow down. We sprint, feast, slow down. I feel like I burn myself out when I try and combine the two. When I have these, when I'm doing the grazing, when I'm just making, like, I'm very busy on a very steady schedule, so there's not really many breaks. But then I get that big excited energy, like that lion energy, where I have an idea, I go full force at it, but none of the other stuff gets taken off my plate. That's where I find I get burned out. And my practice has been, on a general basis, week to week, making sure that actually my plate isn't full and my schedule isn't full. And so that it allows for that lion energy to have that idea to go sprint after it, to have that project that I go hard in, then I take a rest, then go hard in that project and take a rest. And I'm trying to bring that into the business. One of the reasons that we've implemented the 4-day work week, which by the way, kicks off in, is it a week? I'm so excited about it.
Next week.
Yeah. Is because I feel like we've had a sprint, we've had a launch, and now I want people to take that summer to slow down so that they can gear up for the next sprint, because we're a female only team. And I think there's a lot of power in that. And I think we have to be able to work in that cycle and give ourselves that breathing room. We're all very creative to slow down, to be able to not be firing on all cylinders so that we can then fire on all cylinders. So that part is how I get burned out. But also so it's interesting because I feel like I've always earned more than almost every man I know, and I do earn more than any man I know or any man I'm friends with or close to. But I feel like that for me never comes from working like a man. Mm. I have definitely worked like a man in the past, and I would say my hormones were very, very screwed up as a response to that. I no longer do that, but I earn significantly more. And I actually think that, I know this is like very woo-woo, but if we talk about like Shakti and life force energy, when I am fully in my flow, feeling like really filled up with life force energy and really filled up with creativity and things like that, I make so much money. And it really isn't to do with how much I'm grinding and hustling. And people ask me about money mindset. You've seen it on the team. Like, can we have an episode on money mindset? People ask me about money mindset. And I don't really have like a framework or a teaching around money mindset, because to me, money comes from me having life source energy and being mm-hmm. so filled up with life force energy and being so creative that I make shit tons of money. But if I am depleted, if I started working like a man and I started ignoring all my cycles, I started ignoring the fact that I need to be filled up, if I started working like that, I would then find myself burned out and not earning. So it's really interesting. Like, I don't, maybe there is money mindset stuff in there, but it doesn't feel like money mindset to me. It feels like money energy, if that makes sense. Yeah.
No, it does. And what it makes me think about is, you know, to be able to have, back to the cow and lion analogy, like, to be able to have space in your work rhythm, in your life rhythm, to have lion seasons, you have to manage your life like a cow, right? Like, you have to create stability and you have to create a daily rhythm that's like, okay, this is what we do as baseline. And in doing that, like, this is the nuance that I think is so important here, is like, you can't book yourself out at 40 hours a week and think you're going to be able to have a growth season. Because if you're already at 40 hours a week capacity, then that means that your capacity is already full. You can't go into growth season. You can't be a cow well, the cow and lion analogy kind of falls apart at that point, but it's like you can't add the sprint energy on top of somebody who's just run a marathon, you know, like the, well, you like don't have the, it left the cow, in the tank.
The cow can't be a lion.
Right. Exactly. The cow can't be a lion. Exactly. So it's like you have to start your day as a cow and then leave. this analogy has gone awry. But I think what I'm getting at is like, this is such a thing that we talk about and that you, I think, have mastered. I don't think you do it intentionally because of money mindset, but you leave space and you communicate so clearly with us on the team when you feel like you don't have enough space for there to be you to be able to go deep into something if you need to. And if the weeks that you get to full capacity, you're like, I don't like how this feels because I can't jump at something if I need to. I can't go in a lion mode if something's wrong because I'm so at capacity. And so I think especially as you get to be more successful and you've learned this, like the secret as you become more successful and you magnetize money to you and you grow is that there you actually have to leave time open so that you can, if the lion opportunity comes along, you have it in the tank to jump. If you've been in full lion mode for weeks and weeks and weeks at a time and you're going full capacity on and on and on and on, you are going to burn out, which means the next big thing that needs your attention, you can't jump at. And I think that's why when we take that back down into real life, it's like when we're talking about what's enough, what is enough, you know, and when is enough enough. And I think a lot of us are like, well, it's only enough if I'm at full capacity. And I think the challenge that we have looked at and really worked through ourselves and we're building into the business is like, full capacity is one consideration. And, you know, when we're looking at team members and salaries and roles, like, yeah, we want to have a talk about capacity. And when you're looking at you and your relationship to your business and your lifestyle and how everything fits together, if every piece of your life feels like it's at full capacity all the time, you're burned out. And I think that that is a lot of what we've been conditioned to think is what we have to do. Like if you're not at full capacity in everything in your life, you're somehow failing. And I think that's a myth that millennials believe. Like when I say that out loud, I'm like, yeah, I believe that. If I'm not using my full potential all the time, I'm failing at something. That means Lindsay, like little achiever Lindsay, is not doing her best. And I think that is hardwired into a lot of us and something that is really challenging to soften on. And you have, you know, what you're saying is you've figured it out where it's like, I've actually learned when I have capacity left over and I can step back and I can sit in my capacity, I have this like infinite expansive magnetism to let things come at me. And then as things come at me, shit, I can be a lion and jump at it because I have the capacity ready to go after it. That's mastery. And you don't do it because you're like a money mindset master. You do it because you've learned being at 100% capacity all the time doesn't work.
Yeah. One thing I wrote down as you were talking about that was how I've realized that being at full capacity doesn't mean I'm at full potential. Mm. And actually being at full potential is going to require me to be at a low capacity. Because if you are doing, you're leaving no space to think and evolve. And when you're thinking and evolving, then executing at that level, you move up how much potential of yours that you are actually stepping into. Whereas if you are just doing, executing, you're actually not stepping into more and more of your potential. You're just executing at the same level of potential that you're at. But every time I think about stepping into more and more of my potential, it requires me to step back, learn, regroup, reassess, fill up again, and then jump into something else. But it's never like my capacity and my potential is if I'm full with one, I'm full with another. That's been such an interesting realization for me. I also am really excited. I haven't told you yet. I'm going to do a Shakti activation for our CEO mamas.
Yay. Well, we can't ruin that. Well, I guess, yeah, they might be listening, so we can't tell.
Well, I won't tell them what we're going to do, but I really want to help women tap into more of this life force energy because I know what is so possible with it. Like, I just really feel the difference of when I am executing from life force energy, how fun and energetic and expansive it feels versus when I'm executing from just a depleted tank. It's a completely different ball game.
Or just like the depletion. And I also think that there's something to be said for like, you know, there's the spectrums. There's like really lit up, full of life force energy. And then there's like fully depleted, really, really burned out, which is definitely not where we want to be executing from. But I also think there's this like middle zone, like middle end, where it's like you're kind of in it. Like you check the boxes. You're like on paper getting it done. But the people around you or and maybe your clients can feel that you're like meh. And I think that there's also that to be considered in this calculation around like capacity and potential, because I think sometimes it feels worse to be in the like halfway in energy, because then you're like, I have potential here and I have days where I like the spark kind of lights up and I feel it. And then, but then like, this isn't really where I want to be, or there's something else in my life that's draining me or whatever it may be. And if you're in that kind of like meh relationship with your business, or your business is causing your life to feel, you know, iffy, it's like, what's the point of this? You know, like if I'm going to devote energy of my life force energy to anything, especially a business, I want it to feel like, yes, it's my me and my potential. And I want it to feel like it's very additive to my energy. And especially if it's my business being additive to my life, right? And I think that it's funny, because I think a lot of people wouldn't necessarily say they're fully depleted, but I think that they would say, I'm just like, I'm meh, you know?
I'm not lit up.
And I think we see that a lot in people we talk to, and it comes up in CEO Mom and stuff, where it's like, I'm not like so burned out that I can't do it, or I'm my health is being affected, but this doesn't light me up the way it used to, or like, I'm just checking boxes. And how long do you want to go through your life just checking boxes? Like, that's another big edgy question, I think, for a lot of us when we start to look at burnout and potential and capacity and like what we're conditioned to believe about ourselves. I think a lot of us are conditioned to believe that like, it's worse to give up on something and go find the life force energy than it is to like stay in something and check boxes. And I really challenge that belief as someone who's been there, and years have gone by of doing something where I didn't feel passionate about it or lit up by it. And I do think over time that depletes you in like spiritual ways that, mm-hmm. that like actually overworking hours wise doesn't measure the same as it, like the physical depletion of overworking towards something you really want. So I don't know. That's another thing that I feel like has come up where I'm like, that's so interesting.
I agree. And I feel like that is kind of like, there's like leaks.
Yeah.
You might be doing the things you can do to fill up that life force energy, but there's leaks. And actually this brings me on to something else I was going to talk about. So it's a perfect segue. A big leak can be not being surrounded by people that actually are, let's say you work with them, they're not holding themselves accountable, they're not executing, they're not doing what they say they'll do. That's really leaky for you. And that's going to deplete you. Even if you're filling up in all the ways, that is going to really, really deplete you. Or let's make it personal. Let's say your partner actually isn't pulling their weight. That's leaky. That's going to deplete you because you start to build resentment. So it can be personal or professional. And I did want to talk about how we can hold team more accountable, because I get a lot of those questions as we talk about it. But I think the more leaks you have, you can do your work, but if you're also not setting yourself up for success in your teams or your relationships, and I've also been there in so many personal and professional ways, you're going to keep finding yourself depleted and almost on this hamster wheel of like, fuck, I'm ticking all the boxes, I'm doing all the things, and I feel it rising, and I feel myself getting excited and lit up about it, and then XYZ happens, and it feels like this is taking so much of my energy that I actually can't channel it in the places that I'm most excited about or that I want to. You might be yeah. like really aligned and on that path, but if that's happening, I think it's really leaky and it's hard. Let's take a minute to talk about one of my favorite educational platforms, Masterclass. I have been referring back to this platform for years, and I love that you can simply log in and take inspirational classes from world-class coaches no matter where you are. If you haven't explored Masterclass yet, go to masterclass.com/bossbabe and scroll through some of the categories. I think you'll really love what you see. One of the latest classes I tuned into was Anna Wintour's class on creativity and leadership. She takes you into her office as Vogue's editor-in-chief, and it was so inspiring to learn about her leadership style, team culture, and how she encourages creativity in her team. Not only does Masterclass have tangible business development classes that you can watch at your desk or listen to on the go, but it also includes classes in 10 other categories ranging from food, home and lifestyle, music, wellness, design, and so much more. There are over 200 classes to choose from, with new classes added every month. This year, learn from the best to become your best with Masterclass. Plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's no risk. And right now, our listeners will get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/bossbabe. Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/bossbabe, masterclass.com/bossbabe. Let's take a quick pause to talk about my new favorite all-in-one platform, Kajabi. You know I've been singing their praises lately because they have helped our business run so much smoother and with way less complexity, which I love. Not to mention our team couldn't be happier because now everything is in one place. So it makes collecting data, creating pages, collecting payment, all the things so much simpler. One of our mottos at Boss Babe is simplify to amplify, and Kajabi has really helped us do that this year. So of course I needed to share it here with you. It's the perfect time of year to do a bit of spring cleaning in your business, you know? Get rid of the complexity and instead really focus on getting organized and making things as smooth as possible. I definitely recommend Kajabi to all of my clients and students. So if you're listening and haven't checked out Kajabi yet, now is the perfect time to do so because they are offering Boss Babe listeners a 30-day free trial. Go to kajabi.com/bossbabe to claim your 30-day free trial. That's kajabi.com/bossbabe.
Yeah, it's funny that as you write that out, or as you're talking, I wrote down, you know, leaky energy, and the source can be in the business, people you work with, your team, like that kind of stuff. It can be your relationship. And I wrote down inner world because I also think we can be energetically leaky in the way that we're treating ourselves or we're thinking, and like we're prone to like overlooking our own little things that we're doing that might be our inner practices or the food we're consuming. Like how we treat ourselves can be this leaky energy source too. And I think it's the same way where you can feel really lit up and really into something and then get sick, or you know, have your energy crash in the middle of the afternoon every day, and like and then you can overlook it and not credit it to what it's actually causing it, because it's easy for us to be like, oh, it's this or that or whatever, when it's truly an internal energy leak. And so I think as much as we talk about team and relationships, it's also this challenge of like, and we've got to be treating ourselves well too. And you and I talk about that a lot, but I think that that's something that our generation and a lot of women we meet who are leading businesses, we become low on the list because there's so many other things that have to get done every day. And it is like we were talking before we pushed record that neither of us have showered yet today. And I'm like, I'm feeling it at, you know, at this time of the afternoon that, you know, cause we just got up and we got going on our day and Noemi's around and all this stuff. And it's like, I need to shower. Like, when am I going to do that? But it's so easy to be excited about work and get going. And then these little things start to nag at you, you know? So I think that that's in looking at all these bubbles of our lives where we get to choose how our energy applies. It's good to take inventory every once in a while and go, okay, am I truly lit up by this? Am I bringing my life force energy? Am I in a rhythm where I have capacity to jump like the lion if something does come up that I want? Or am I burning burning on all cylinders, going full capacity for weeks at a time? And if I am, why, you know, is this what I truly want to be doing? And when is enough enough? So, I like these kind of calculations and like these little energy audits that we need to do in our lives on a regular basis to go, where's all my energy going? Does this feel fulfilling? And are there any places in my life where I'm just checking boxes? Because if that's the energy you're bringing to something, like, no bueno.
I agree. And also, hot take, but I do my best creative work when I haven't showered.
Really?
Yeah.
Tell me about this.
Before I had Noemi.
When you haven't showered?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Before I had Noemi, I would write so well in the morning before I've showered and brushed my teeth. And I know that sounds so gross, but having like a long shower or spending too long getting ready in the morning can kind of pull me out of like a creative flow. So before I was a mum, my creative flow on writing days was I would get up, make my coffee, read a book, journal, and then dive into writing and probably brush my teeth somewhere in that. But I wouldn't shower literally until at least after lunch, and I would be so in the zone. But as soon as I'd showered and got ready for the day, my energy completely would shift. And then I'd be like ready for calls, ready for like extroverting stuff. Now, obviously, it's a little bit different because I get up and I'm like actually giving Noemi energy and stuff in the morning. But if I can delay like full showers and like full getting ready processes, I am way more creative. I don't know if there's like some kind of science-y to this, but there's a zone that I'm in when I wake up from sleeping that I'm taken out of when I'm like spending too long getting ready.
I mean, somebody should DM us and tell us the science that knows it, because I bet there is science. But I have heard that of like, you know, writers that they get up and they literally like roll out of bed and walk five steps to their writing desk, and they don't do anything else, because it's like your mind is in that like brainwave state where you can almost basically channel it out of you at that point versus having to think about it. But if you, once you wake up your nervous system, now your nervous system's a little more alert. Now you have to like think a little harder about how to create. That makes sense to me. It sounds like permission too, to like do you, boo, like make your own schedule during the day, whatever works.
And my process, so how long ago was this? Probably 5 years. So a big way that we would sell at Boss Babe was through stories. And I would always write these long clickable stories out, and I would do it every single morning, and we'd always have a call to action on them. And I would always, always, always have the same routine every single morning. I would wake up at like 5 or 6 early. I was young, had more energy. I would wake up maybe 5 or 6 and make a bulletproof coffee. And I would probably read for about 10 minutes. And then I would sit and take an hour to create all my content for the day. And I mean, that fueled the business. Like that was 90% of business's new revenue was coming in from that. And I would always, always have to do it before I shower and get ready. I mean, I honestly did it before I brushed my teeth. Like, I don't know why, but that would pull me out. But my content would be on another level when I did it that way. And I fully would lean into that. And like, I protected that time. And I was on Pacific time too. And we had team in the UK, not in Eastern time. So I would have to like not have my phone turned on and then keep it on airplane mode to create all the content, because the minute I started getting reactive, responding to any of that would pull me out of it. So there is method in the madness. There's something to it for me personally, something to it works. And then when I shout, so tonight I'll like before dinner, I'll shower, and that will be my transition into like out of work into chill mode. It bookends my day.
Wow. It's got to be something with the nervous system and like waking your nervous system up a little bit more, being more alert and like out of creativity. But that's fascinating.
Something. Yeah. Do you not feel like that?
I mean I don't know I'm thinking about it. I mean, I'm obviously not at my own home right now, so I'm trying to like think about my rhythm at home, but I have gotten a little bit, I feel like a little, I want to say the word lazy, but it's not lazy because I work fucking hard, but like I've gotten into the rhythm of letting the boys wake me up in the morning instead of being up ahead of them. And they are sleeping a little later now, like later, they get up at 6. So it, you know, like I used to get up before them and intentionally have that kind of creative space. And yeah, same thing. I wouldn't brush my teeth. I would like make coffee and sit in the dark and journal and read and like have kind of like channeling the universe manifestation time. And now I feel like they wake us up and it's like, I don't feel like I get jolted awake in any negative kind of way, but like we cuddle and we tickle and like, you know, it's like little cute little kid time as a family. But then it's like, yeah, lunches, breakfast, get Sawyer out the door. Like everything kind of picks up into like get it done mode. And then I don't transition back into like work mode until it's like right before we start. Usually we start our day at Boss Babe, you know, and by then I have checked my phone. I am like alert. I'm on. I'm already thinking about what everybody needs from me. And obviously I get, you know, people are waiting for me to wake up usually because we have East Coast and the UK team still too. So that's interesting for me to think about. Like I'm not sure, but in my previous life of having that morning practice that I was so dedicated to, it did feel that way. It's like you that darkness, the dark hour, right? Like if you can kind of preserve a little bit of the veil that you have between sleeping and waking, you can channel better in that time. Yeah. To try it.
That's making me think, actually, Noemi is sleeping till 6:50 every single day right now. And I think because I haven't slept in 2 years, well, actually longer than that, because I had pregnancy insomnia, so maybe 2.5 years I haven't slept. I'm milking every last minute that she's sleeping. But part of me is starting to think, you know what, should I? especially now that I'm writing more, should I actually be getting up even at 6 and sitting and actually getting that done? And would that feel, I'm trying to weigh it up. It's like, I think this is like another thing where I'm trying to weigh up. Would that actually feel more supportive and have me feel more filled? Or would I benefit from the 50 minutes extra of sleep? I don't know the answer yet.
Yeah.
But maybe I should give it a try.
Yeah, it's the question, like the perennial question of mothers, like an extra hour of sleep or this project I want to get done.
Yeah, and like alone time. Because mm-hmm. I really remember those mornings, and I feel like, I mean, that was such a pivotal moment of for Boss Babe, just that creativity channeled into those building blocks. And as we step into a new phase this year with projects that are very new to us, I'm just wondering, actually, would that be a really good practice? Because mm-hmm. you're right, like the minute babies get up, kids get up, it's just like you're in action mode.
And yeah,
there's no slowness to it. I mean, she gets into bed and cuddles and we feed her milk, but I'm still, as soon as she's there, my nervous system is attuned to her.
Yeah.
When she's not there before that, I probably could actually be more internal.
Yeah. Well, and I think you said alone time, which is another thing that just reminded me that came up in one of the talks I've done recently, which I think is correlated to where we opened around burnout. Like, I think one of the things that our generation also has discounted a lot is, like, since we were adolescents, we haven't been alone. And I don't mean like physically alone. I mean, like, we always have our phones. And mm-hmm. and I think one of the things that we're suffering from and leads to this feeling of burnout, even if we're not at full capacity, or leads to this feeling of burnout, even if we have like a lot of life force energy and really good energy going into our work and our lives, is we don't actually have alone time. Cause like we sit on the toilet with our phones. Like we go on walks with our phones. Like I listen to podcasts all the time. I don't like our parents they had alone time. Like they could listen to the radio, I guess, when they were driving, but like if they went for a run, they didn't really take their iPad with them and like listen to a podcast. If they, you know, if they were in the bathroom, they were just in the bathroom. Like they didn't fill every single second that they had with someone else's voice or someone else's face or someone else's content. And I think we do that a lot, you know? And so I also think there's this call to look at the juxtaposition of burnout and your life force energy and your capacity and go, how much of these in between moments that, so maybe I can't get 2 hours of alone time every day because I have a young baby, but how much of your in between transitionary moments are you filling with scrolling or someone else's voice? But don't stop listening to our podcast. But like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
that's an awareness for me of like, oh yeah, I complain about not having alone time. And yeah, I could get up earlier and have a practice and I need to do that. And I also have the opportunity to take 15 minute breaks between calls and just go sit in the sun. But what do? I typically scroll, or I get caught up on Slack, or I, you know, like go find somebody who's in my house, you know, my nanny or somebody to go talk with, you know, versus just sitting alone for 15 minutes and like refilling my energetic cup. So I think that's a good call out too on the need for alone time and how our lives really don't have much alone time anymore.
So good. It's so, I had such a similar conversation with Stephen yesterday, and we were talking about, we were listening to a song in the car that inspired, you know, and songs just bring up memories in you.
Mm-hmm.
Brought up the memory of when I did 3 months in Asia without a phone, and I went completely without a phone. I didn't check in with my family, nothing. Didn't go on social media, was completely without it. And how I was talking to Stephen about it, like, I was going through a big heartbreak, probably the biggest heartbreak back then. And like, I really knew I wanted to heal it. And I decided to go on this healing journey without my phone. And it was so powerful. It's so funny how we're having that conversation. But a part of me listening to this, I'm like, I can foresee us creating a life force challenge inside of the society, actually. Yeah. And really thinking back to the practices that we know have filled us up the most in the past. Like, I think about it like a slingshot. That's really, like, I think about a lot of the moments where I've hit big milestones. Before that, I always pulled back. Always pulled back. And what was I doing when I pulled back to then be able to let go and shoot forward? I feel like we could actually create something like this inside of the society and put a few practices in. And even 30 days and just watch the magic unfold. Because I think so often we think that to get the results, we have to do more. And what I'm just hearing from us both in this conversation is actually, it's not about all the doing and it's not about doing more, but if we are this generation of, especially women, being so burned out, we need to be doing less more intentionally. And I think a lot of that is going to come back to how do we fill up our life force energy? Because that's the real magic, especially as women. I also just talked about this too on the panel I was on a few weeks ago, because there was a conversation around being breadwinner in your family. And a couple of the women were saying, you know, they love it when they're with partners who actually don't mind that they're so ambitious and that they earn a ton and that their partners can support them. And I love that. I think we should all be with men who fully, fully support us. And there should never be, our men should never be trying to compete with us or make us like smaller or turn down our light or earn less or anything like that. I think we all deserve to be with men that fully support us. And it may be this controversial to say, but I don't think that us being supported is all they should be doing. Like, oh, I support you to go out there and crush it. Okay, well, I still expect more from you. And the way I was sharing it with them, with the whole audience, was this has been a challenge for me in my relationship when I felt like, yes, he's always, always been supportive of me. Steven's one of the most supportive, incredible men I've ever met. And he has his own stuff going, all that stuff. But whenever I feel like women, and I'll talk about me, but I feel like women generally, we are very, very good at pouring out energy to others. We are very, very good at pouring energy into our community, into our team, into our clients, into our family, extended family. We are very good at putting it out there. The way that I feel best in my dynamic with Steven and the way that it works for us when I am the breadwinner is for him to pour into me. And yeah. Men are very, very good at generating their own energy. And if he generates and holds a lot of his own energy and pours it into me, I feel a lot more full to then go and pour it into others. But if I don't feel poured into and I'm just pouring out everywhere, that's one of those leaks we're talking about, then it's not just enough for me to know that my husband's out there cheering me on. It's like, no, this is a team. And if we're in partnership doing this together, how are you pouring into me? And I think that's also part of the conversation. And I think stuff that we can really talk about, and we do talk about it, but I want to open up that conversation more.
Yeah. No, this is a very current conversation in my household too. As you know, you and I have been talking about it for weeks. And it's so dynamic. You know, I think being the breadwinner is, it's not that it's unnatural for women, but maybe this is super controversial to say, it is a little unnatural, I feel like, to be the one who is responsible to bring in the bulk of the income to support the family and the mental load of the household, you know, which like statistically falls on women more than men, right? So like we're generalizing, I'm making a lot of general statements, but for me, I both am the quote unquote breadwinner financially, and I take on more than 50% of like the household day-to-day kind of stuff. And so, and I like, I've taken responsibility for my own role in creating that system and all of that, but it's like, now that I'm aware of it, especially the financial piece where I'm like, okay, like I said this to RT a few weeks ago, I was like, I want you to make more money. And it just like came out of my mouth. But he's in a place in his business where like, he can't really make more money right now. His business is in a phase where he can't just like take more money out of the business. And so I was like, wonder what this means. Like, is that really what I mean? Like, do we need more money? Is that really what it is? Or is it that like, I'm not feeling supported in other ways and money
That's
is like
what I think it is.
The vocabulary have for it. Yeah.
You're bowling.
Yeah. Well, yes. And I think I'm like, how fascinating that the only vocabulary we have to interact with our men around like how we might feel supported is money, like make more money. So I've really been in that question over the last few weeks of like, well, what support from him would feel like
I have a practice I'm going to give you privately.
Okay.
I don't know if we can bring it to the podcast yet. Listen, if you guys want this practice, leave us a review, 5 stars, and tell us. But I'll give you something privately that will set your world on fire in all the best ways.
I'm here for it because I think this, but like, I don't think I'm alone. Even if you're not the breadwinner, quote unquote, but even like one of the questions I asked when I was speaking a few weeks ago was like, okay, if you're not the breadwinner, is your income as the woman, in your family system, is your income critical to your lifestyle? And everyone raised their hands. Like,
right.
There's nobody, very few people in the room for whom their income is like inconsequential. They don't need it at all. And so I'm like, okay, then these practices and these questions are really relevant to everyone around how are you being supported and what do you need that isn't financially, you know, determined, but are some of these energetic things that could really help support you so that you aren't feeling burned out or you aren't feeling obligated to work at a pace that's not right for you.
Completely agree. And the thing is, I think even if it wasn't money, it's still that conversation of, I do feel like women do a lot and hold a lot, and if and are constantly pouring energy out, whether it's a financial conversation or not. And I think in partnership, we do get to be poured into. So
yeah,
I'm all for it, and I really love this conversation.
Me too.
It's, I think it's really important.
Do you want to touch on team? I feel like this is also like, I think this is related. There's partnership, and there's the people who you're intimately. This is the link I want to make because I think it does tie in here. There's the intimate relationships in your life. And I mean intimate, not like sex intimate. I mean like people who know you really closely. Like you and I have an intimate relationship. We know a lot about each other that we wouldn't necessarily ever speak about publicly, right?
Let's hope.
And yeah. And then we have intimate relationships with our partners and you know, friends and things like that. And then there's people who we have relationships with and we spend a lot of time with every day, like people that we work with, right? Or people who work for us, or even sometimes family members where you're not super close to them, but you know, you're in relationship with them. And I think some of these conversations, and like, it doesn't have to be a one-way street energetically. And I think sometimes when we're building our business and we start to hire a team, and now we're like, well, I owe them something, or like, this isn't working, but it's on me because it's my business, you know? And like, it can feel like a one-way street energetically, in the same way that an intimate relationship might start to feel, you know? And then you get resentment growing and you're like, crap, like, how do I have this conversation with team, or how do I manage this with people who are not necessarily, you know, my family or my partner, where there's more on the line, like, you know, and more nuance to it because we're intimately connected. Are these like, so when you think about it, like, are some of these energetic conversations and the way that you look at team, do you think of it similarly to relationships and partner? Like, it's a two-way street in the energetic exchange?
Kind of. So I did write a few things down in case we wanted to talk about team. I will say, I feel like if you're the entrepreneur or the leader, I feel like a lot of our responsibility is pouring into our team, so our team can then go and pour into the rest of the team or clients or the business as a whole. So I don't think it's so much of a two-way street, but I do think it is absolutely essential that we hold team accountable, because if we're pouring in and doing our side of holding our side of the street, I think holding team accountable is actually really, really important, because if we don't, that's a big energy leak like we talk about, and you're going to feel like you're depleted because you're doing other people's jobs. So when I was thinking about this conversation coming in, I think there's two elements of it. I think there's the inner side of holding people accountable and the outer side. I think the inner side is something I've really struggled with in the past, and thank fuck I have healed, because it was a nightmare, was people pleasing. I was such a people pleaser that I was really terrible at holding people accountable, because the idea of letting someone down or getting into those uncomfortable conversations, or, you know, it was just very, very uncomfortable for me. And so I wouldn't hold people accountable. I would just go and do their work for them, which, yes, would relate to burnout. And I didn't have a baby at the time, so I was more than willing. Like, I had that extra time, right? Like, I'll get up early, I'll work late. I had more of that energy, and I would just do people's jobs for them. And I would avoid those uncomfortable conversations. I wouldn't want to like make someone feel bad or make them feel like I'm expecting too much. And I think a lot of my worth was tied up in how much I was doing and executing. Oh, I can do that, I can do that, I can do that. So yes, it's the inner. And then I also made a list of some of the outer. So if you've worked on the inner side and you're like, fuck no, like, I'm ready to hold people accountable, I'm paying them, like, they should be doing their job, I don't want to do their jobs for them, I think there's four things, and I would love your perspective on this. I think you're such an expert with this. I think there's four things. If someone's not doing their job, there's four things that you want to look at. The first is skills. do they actually have the skills to execute on what you're asking them to execute at the level you're asking them to execute at? Motivation. Are they actually motivated to execute on this, whether that's financial or beyond that, like internal motive, like are they actually motivated? Third is capacity. Are your expectations realistic or unrealistic? Do they actually have capacity? And the fourth is, could it be a knock-on effect from other team members? So, you know, is it the fact that they're not doing their jobs, or is it the people before them actually aren't doing their jobs properly, that they're not passing the baton? Like if you think about like a relay race, and so it's actually not where maybe pointing the blame in the wrong way. So whenever I am having the thought that someone's not really doing what they're being asked to do, that's generally the place that my head will go to, those four places, and I'll assess that to then decide what my next steps are. But I'm curious also you, because I feel like, I mean, this is literally your job.
Yeah.
As people.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's all of these things. And I think sometimes they mask, right? Like I'm thinking of like assessing these things with situations we've dealt with recently on our team over the last, you know, year, or I guess I'm only like 7 months. I feel like I've worked here for a long time. But we've had to have a few conversations over the time that I've been in the role with people where it seems at first like it's one of these, but it comes out that it's another. And you and I are so, you know, we really dig in before we have conversations with people or we look at anybody's performance. We're like, what have we done? You know, like it always starts at the top. And so we're always looking for that too. But yeah, I mean, I think that's what I would add to this is it's not always easy to assess and not to jump, like, you don't necessarily want to jump into like blaming one of these things, because it might be all four, you know, it might be that it might be a combination of all four, or that something has gone left unattended for long enough that now it's kind of into all of it. And so I would say the thing to add to this is, before you take action on any of them, it's important to understand how you, like as their leader, how you've supported them in each one. What expectations did you set, so that even if they're lacking motivation or they're lacking the skills, like did you put them in a role, like did you put them in a role knowing they didn't have the skills, and now you're holding them, now you're, you know, now that's leading to poor performance or whatever. So what expectations were communicated? And then like the intangible thing for me that kind of tacks on to the end of all of it is, what do they want? You know, and I think we're getting to this with this modern age of working remotely and people waking up to their sovereignty. And like, we run a very entrepreneurial team, right? Like all of our people are really empowered to kind of manage their own schedule and to think of the business to some extent as their own business, and to really look for opportunities on how we could all be doing things better. And I think sometimes what I'm looking for people specifically on our team is like, I want it to feel like when I'm working with you, that you want to be here, that you love it here, and that you know, like you would jump in if we needed you on anything. And I think sometimes people can have all the skills and they can have the motivation and they can have the capacity, and like the whole team can be performing great, and you still get this like meh feeling from them. And you're like, what is this? This is so interesting. Like, what's going on here? And I think some of that comes down to what we talked about earlier around just general life force. And like, maybe they're just not a match energetically, or something's happening in their life that's totally not at all connected to work, but it's affecting them energetically. And I think that you and I have had these edgy conversations where I'm like, I don't know, like all the boxes are checked, but I don't feel good about the energy. And I feel like it's causing a ripple effect where performance wise, it's hard to point at something that's, you know, exactly wrong, but overall the energy is off. So I still think you can manage that just like you would in a relationship where you're like, I don't know, like he's a good boyfriend, but like something's not a match, you know, like I think it's kind of the same, that same assessment. And so that's why I wanted to bring it up, because I'm like, I think we feel it and we can relate to it really closely in our intimate relationships where we're like, I don't know, something's just off. I have this intuition that he's not telling me the truth, or I just need something else for my husband and I really want to know it. And then we get to team and we're like, I don't know, like it has to be managed. it has to be really clear. I have to have it all written out for HR and all these things. And like, yeah. And I also think when we start to get into these realms of freedom and capacity and potential, and we want to really look at each individual that we're in relationship with, both in our life and in our business, every one of these relationships has an energy to them. And one piece person's being off, even if all the boxes are checked, can still bring the overall energy of the business down, you know? And so I think that's what I'm always looking for in our team, is not so much, obviously, yes, that these four things are being managed well and that everybody's good. And I'm always looking for that like little energetic nuance of like, something doesn't feel right here. What's going on?
I think it's a really good call out. It's like something you can't put into words, but often if you have very direct conversations with someone, it will become apparent. Oh, that's what I couldn't put my finger on. That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I get that.
So I think that these are like, I like that we talk about these things, because this is the real stuff that happens behind the scenes. And then like, we feel burned out.
Yeah.
We do, because we're dealing, like, something's off. So it, like you're saying, there's this, you either jump in and you do people's jobs for them and that burns you out, or you don't do their jobs for them, but something's off, and you notice it on the team, or you notice it in your revenue, and you're like, then that burns you out because you're mentally ruminating on it, you know? And so I think like, it's just important when you're, no matter how big of a team you have, no matter how many people are involved in your business or in your life, you can honor these questions that you feel in your body of like, where is burnout coming from? Am I really at capacity? Am I managing my energy in such a way that if an opportunity were to come along, I could jump at it?
Yeah.
And I think so many of us aren't. And I think that that's such a fascinating thing to think about in your own life, is like, man, what if my dream opportunity came in today? Would I even have the capacity to do it? Crazy if you say no to that, you know? And like a former version of me probably would have said no to that a bunch of times, if I was really honest. I know you would have, you know?
Totally.
So this is your deep inner work for the day, my friends.
I love it. I love these conversations. We never know where they're going to go, but I'm all in for creating a life force challenge on the site too. So
let's do it. Summer, life force summer.
Oh my God. Yes. I'm all in for this. Okay, everyone. If you enjoyed this episode, please, please, please leave us a review. A 5-star one, preferably. But let us know what you loved about this episode, because it makes a massive, massive difference with getting this out to people. And if you want to take it a step further, which we would love for you to, if you wanted to share it with someone else or share it on your stories, that would mean the absolute world, because we are going all in on our podcast this year and we just want to get it into the ears of as many women as possible. We're pouring so much into it. So that would mean the absolute world to us. We appreciate you.
Yeah. Please do. And tag us. We'll share.
Tag us. Okay. Bye, everyone.
Bye.